That sort of leans into the previous interview I had with your husband, Mike. So he was an adult, still having issues with reading because he had some undiagnosed issues he had going on. And he just like praised you so much as being such a big part in how you pushed him and worked with him. And, you know, he went through the Harry Potter book that he was reading with you all those nights. And I mean, welcome to the Phrase This Team podcast. I am your host, M. Ross. Today, I am here with an experienced scientist, a Potter, and the spouse of our previous guest, Mike Wright. Marie Wright. Marie, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Sure.
So, can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I guess I grew up in Southern California in a place where biotechnology was a big deal, and I wanted to grow up and be a scientist. So I did that. I worked in science for my 20s and 30s. And then when I hit my 40s, I changed careers and became a potter, and that's what I'm doing now.
Awesome. So can you talk about your educational journey that led you to where you are today?
I think it was pretty normal. I just went through school and then I went to community college for a couple of years, for a science background. And that's actually where I first tried pottery because, I thought, community college is cheap. I can have some fun and do some cool stuff. And I really enjoyed it. But I continued on my scientific path and went away from that. And then I went to university at UC Santa Barbara. And then I got a job at the Amgen, which was the biotechnology company, which was local to me when I was growing up.
Okay. So is that what sort of got you interested in that industry and science? Is that it was kind of just all around you as you were growing up?
It was all around me. I really wanted to be a marine biologist, but I learned that that doesn't make any money, and I wasn't in a super happy home, so I didn't want to have to be married to anyone that to support me. So I thought I need to do some kind of science that will make me money. So I chose biotech because it was all around me, and people were doing well off of it, and I thought that's the way for me.
Makes sense. And so what about the pottery piece? How'd that sort of come about?
Well, my husband had a lot to do with that. When we met, it was right when we got married, right when I graduated high school and he got out of, or graduated college and he got out of the Navy. And I was, trying to get my first job in biotech, which wasn't easy. But I was always saying, gosh, I did pottery for 2 semesters in college and I loved it. And when I get old, I want to do that again. And that was really all it was in my head. But the first birthday I had, he bought me a wheel. And my dad, who does not like to be outdone, bought me a tiny little kiln. So I was like, oh. So I just started taking night classes. So it wasn't really intentional on my part. It was really Mike who
Interesting.
got me back into that. Yeah.
So, okay, so at some point you decided to switch careers. So you did your work in the biotech industry and then moved into pottery. Like, what was the
Yeah.
sort of impetus for that?
Well, I loved pottery, so I started taking classes all the time, and then I started traveling to take classes. I would find like one master potter per year and then travel to wherever they were and learn from them. And I started getting better. And with when you do art, you start getting piles of art around your house. So you're like, well, I guess maybe I'll try and sell some of this. So I started doing sales and it went well. So it just started to grow into a business naturally.
Nice.
And with the science, it was really fun and exciting. But as it changed and evolved over time, I realized how little I like being micromanaged and how much more fun I was having in the pottery and how scientific, the glazes and stuff actually is. And I realized I was enjoying it much, much more than my regular work. So, so after a while, I just said, this is not going to happen to me. I'm going to have to make the choice to ditch science and do this full time. So I did. I decided to give myself a 2-year window where I would stop doing science and really try and make a go of it as an artist. And if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, it didn't.
And in your particular pottery, I mean, if I understand correctly, you didn't necessarily ditch science altogether, right? You have a sort of science implementation within your art. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I do crystalline glazed pottery, which means that the glazes are really unique because you grow crystals in the glaze, in the molten glaze, while it's at about 2,000 degrees in a kiln over the course of several hours. And those crystals form the decoration on the pottery. So, but anybody who's worked in any kind of crystallography knows that crystal growth is not very easy. You have to have very specific conditions, and you have to, it's a very detailed process. So having a science background has made it, possible for me to do that kind of well. So.
So, I mean, you kind of pointed out that it's sort of a, for lack of a better word, finicky process. So I imagine there's a
Very.
decently high failure rate. So how do you sort of approach and deal with the failure in your work? Like as far as your mindset, how do you approach that?
Well, you just have to accept it. With pottery, the thing that's interesting is that all of the ingredients that I use, unlike science, where you get a really clean, you get a really clean ingredient out of a jar, everything I use for pottery was actually mined out of the earth. Which means that everything that gets dug up has some kind of contamination from the other dirt that it was around. So every batch of raw materials that I get for my pottery is going to be slightly different from the next batch, which means that I'm always kind of chasing a moving target. When I get a new batch of zinc, for instance, my results are going to change. So you have to really understand the science if you want to be able to kind of chase success. And you also have to be able to accept that your new materials are not going to act like the old ones, and you're going to have to figure out how they're different and how to work with them. So the failure is really a part of the process.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I mean that's sort of a metaphor for life, right? I mean, this sort of concept carries over no matter what you're doing.
It's a moving target, and I kind of feel like we need to stop looking at failure as a problem or a downside. It's just part of the path. And especially when you're trying something new, it's totally part of the package. There's nothing to be ashamed of or, stay away from. Just go for it and just accept that it's how you learn and move forward.
Totally. I mean, in my mind, and I'm not the first person to think this or say this, but I don't believe in the idea of failure. The only way failure can come is if I stop, right? Otherwise, I'm just learning. You know, it's just part of the process, like you pointed out.
And I think especially like I see with my I've got a teenage boy, and he and his generation are all or his friends are all trying to like not screw up and do everything right and get everything right the first time. And I'm trying to tell him, it doesn't matter if you mess up. Like, there's literally nothing you can mess up on that can't be fixed. Like, there's nothing you can do. I mean, worst case scenario, you burn your house down, you can still rebuild. Like, no matter what you try and fail at, you can always, just move on and continue to go on with life and learn from it,
No, I totally agree. And I mean, that sort of leads into the previous interview I had with your husband, Mike. So he was an adult, still having issues with reading because he had some undiagnosed issues he had going on. And he just like praised you so much as being such a big part in how you pushed him and worked with him. And you know, he went through the Harry Potter book that he was reading with you all those nights. And I mean, all of that. So it's like, you know, you seem to have a sort of mentality and a values around, you know, that sort of idea about perseverance and not giving up and, you know, working through problems. So where does that come from? How'd you get that?
I just really think that's perseverance is for me probably the best thing that a person can have. Because things aren't going to happen to you that are good. Things aren't going to come your way. Like, maybe you get lucky now and then, but if you want to have a good life and, be successful, you have to persevere. I personally was told many times that I wasn't good enough from a young age, wasn't smart enough, wasn't good enough. And I just tried to do it anyway. I remember in after elementary school, they kind of put me with the regular kids, but I thought, why am I not doing like the tougher classes like the smart kids were? And I went along with it for a few years and just did the regular stuff. And I just realized like I could be doing more, you know? So I talked to my counselor and said, I want to be in honors classes. You know, I felt like if I was going to be a scientist, I needed to take the hard classes, and the counselor put me in them and I did fine. It was, so I think if you see yourself through other people's eyes, you're not, you know, you're not going to be very exciting, and you're not going to do many great things. You have to choose what you want and then take the steps to do it. I mean, I was a C student, I wasn't an A student, but you can still learn everything and you can still be good at things, and you maybe have to try a little harder or practice more, but it's very limiting if you just try things once, and if they don't work out as good as you've seen it work out for other people, then you consider that you didn't succeed at it. That's just, it's going to be very limiting.
No, absolutely. So for you, it was more of an internal thing. There were no real like external factors that sort of let you see this. It was just you observing the world and having just an innate thing going on.
Yeah, I had a lot of things that were telling me I wasn't good enough and stuff. And so, yeah, I think it was kind of internal. I just was like, you know, it's funny. As an adult, I actually heard a quote that made me, that just made everything click in. I went to go see the Dalai Lama talk, and he said, it is none of your business what anyone thinks of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it just resonates with me every day. People don't know me, and what they think are my limitations, you know, they have no background to know what my limitations are. I don't have to, you know, be what other people, you know, think my potential is not defined by what other people think I can do. So yeah, I think it was pretty internal. And with Mike, when I met him and married him, you know, email wasn't really a thing back then. And I didn't realize he couldn't read, because you've met him. He's like really articulate guy. He's a really fun guy and stuff. I didn't realize he couldn't read. And once we got married and he had left the military, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, you need to get a job, figure out what you want to do with your life. And I remember my feelings were, I don't care what you want to be, but be excellent at it. Be really good at it. And that's when he started going back to school. And that's when I realized how limited he was with his reading and writing skills, because he has really pretty bad dyslexia. And so that's another thing. Like, he's an engineer now. He's like the opposite of a failure, but we just needed to work harder to get him to do all the work that it took to get where he is, you know? And you just have to be willing to throw time at it, really. Time and sometimes money, you know?
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in to Raising the Steam. If you're enjoying this conversation, make sure to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Whether it's YouTube, your favorite podcast platform, or our website, your subscription helps us keep bringing you insightful conversations about careers in STEM and STEAM and how people can accelerate their journeys in these fields. Don't forget to leave a review or comment to let us know what you think. Now let's get back to our guests. And so, you know, we all have stories, and I have a story, and sort of, I had a sort of similar to you, where I just one day just realized like, okay, well, if I want to do this, then I just have to put in the time and effort, and I just never look back. And so as a young child, you know, cause I was heading down a negative path, and you know, and it's just kind of like people sort of like maybe Mike, he mentioned how he was sort of headed down a negative path as well at a young age. And so when people sort of see that, they think they correlate it to your intelligence. I mean, I always sort of, in my case, I didn't have a dyslexia or any sort of issues of that nature. Actually, at a very young age, I was in the sort of gifted and talented classes and stuff, but cool. I sort of just lost my way kind of as a young child. But but nonetheless, the people didn't know that who were around me. So they took it like, oh, this guy's dumb kind of thing. Right. And so once I decided, independent of them, my mind was just that if I go down this path, it's not going to end well. And I'm not interested in that. And so I did a different path. And those same people were then like, oh, well, yeah, this guy's brilliant. Like, let's be his friend kind of thing. And that's what made it click for me. Like, oh, OK, like no matter what they think, it's the truth doesn't change. Right. So it only matters what I think and not what exactly. These other people think. So that resonated me what you were saying, just because of my own history.
You know, I grew up with like an Italian family where the women don't have a lot of value above caregiving. So I wasn't encouraged to, you know, to be anything other than a wife when I grew up, I kind of feel like. So stretching out of that box was hard for me. And it's not what, you know, the adults around me saw me as. So, yeah, you had to just, you know, say, this isn't what I want for myself. And it's just not going to be this way, you know? I did not think I'd ever get married, but I met Mike and, I don't know, he's just my guy, so.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That, I mean, because you got a story. I mean, I know it's not all, you know, cotton candy and rainbows, but it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful love story. It's, yeah. I mean, amazing. So I really appreciate you both sharing that story.
Thanks.
But so, I mean, you went from being a scientist and now you're a potter, artist. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about artificial intelligence and how it might affect all industries, you know, science to art. So in art, for example, I mean, let's talk about, for example, AI paired with 3D printing. Do you think something like that and other things with technological advancements might affect your current career as well as maybe even what you were doing before?
Yeah, I think they definitely will affect the science. As I was leaving that industry, I saw how much it wasn't AI then, but how much, you know, having things automated and stuff was taking kind of the brains out of the science. You know, you would just throw so many ingredients into an experiment and just kind of see what happened. Where before you had to use a lot more intelligence in your experimental design to get success. Now you just kind of throw the kitchen sink at it and you'll find something that works. So in a way it's like more success in science because of all the technology. But as a scientist, I felt kind of bored with that kitchen sink attitude. And it's part of why I left actually. And for art, I think it will have an effect, especially on the two-dimensional artists, graphic art and painting and stuff like that. But maybe I'm limited in my imagination. I can't see how it's going to affect potters as much because like right now there's already so many things mass produced. Like, you know, at Target and Walmart, you can get all your dishes and your, you know, knickknacks and stuff, but the art has a kind of soul to it that mass marketed stuff just doesn't have. And I hope that there will always be people that that value that. Because I kind of feel like AI, it's not going to be more competitive than, you know, getting a 50-cent cup at Target, you know.
Makes sense.
But maybe it's just my imagination that's limited there, you know?
No, I mean, I could definitely see an argument on both sides a little bit. But, I mean, no, as far as what you're saying, the soul piece, no, totally. I could totally feel that one because if I buy from an artist, it's not just that, oh, this looks nice. It's more of a personal thing. I'm imagining just the craftsmanship and the maybe in your case the thought and science and your whole life story kind of goes into your work, right? So I mean, you know, I you can't replace that.
It's sort of that, you know, if you put 10,000 hours into learning something, then hopefully what you produce is going to seem more valuable and different. Like, I noticed that when I look at, like, AI artwork, you know how, like, you see stuff on Instagram that was generated by AI? I mean, it's beautiful and amazing and dazzling, but it just sort of lacks the soul or something of actual handmade art. So I think, in a way, I think it'll be really good because it'll get art out a lot cheaper to, you know, a lot of people who don't have as much money are going to be able to surround themselves with much more beautiful things. But hopefully it doesn't obsolete the people who are actually doing the artwork.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, I don't think it will, but who, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But so do you think that when it comes to STEAM, which includes science, technology, engineering, art, mathematics, do you think that nature or nurture is more important for people who work in STEAM?
I think nurture is pretty important because you can have a tendency toward it, but you need to learn so much to actually be able to do anything with it. So, you know, having access to good education and, you know, having someone support you so that you can persevere. Yeah, I think nurture is very important. Having all the opportunities, I guess, present like available is super important. Because even if you really, you know, you're born like a scientist and you tend toward that, if you're not exposed to it and you're not given the opportunities to be in it, I don't think many people will go that way. So
okay. Now, what advice would you give parents who have kids who might be interested in STEAM fields?
Well, something that I've noticed in my own life and my kids' life is that when the children are promoted, like kind of put into categories of like gifted and talented, for instance, like which was what was around when we were there.
Yeah.
It was like 95% boys. Usually it was like one or two girls, and then all the rest in the group was boys. And this was true when I was there. And then my son's, you know, group did this as well. And the only girl in that entire group was one girl who was the twin of her brother, who was also included. So I would especially encourage the parents of the girls to, no matter how well-intentioned the school is at being a science and math school, because my kid was in a science and math magnet school in California. And even though they were like a science school, they still tended much more toward kind of promoting the education of the boys. So if you have a girl, don't let them tell her she can't take tough classes and she can't do well, or, you know, if she's really got her heart set on science, just make sure that you talk to the counselors and get her in the classes that she really wants to be in, because somehow the girls are still getting missed out on. Even though I think we're trying really hard not to do that, I still will see it happening, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then another thing I would tell them is, like, don't worry so much if your kids fail a class. They can take the class again. Like, I feel like there's so much pressure on children these days to get straight A's and do everything just right. But just remember, man, we all fail at stuff sometimes, and they're going to be okay if they have to take a class over, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important for parents to keep in mind.
But let me ask you this. So if you could give advice to yourself as a child, what would that advice be?
Yeah, it would probably just be, you know, go with your gut. You're not always going to get the kind of support you need. And maybe a lot of times you won't get that support, but, you know, that just do what you need for yourself, and keep trying at it. And don't worry when, like, you know, don't let it get into you when people tell you you can't do it. Like, I had a college professor tell me I wasn't smart enough for my degree and that I needed to change it. And, you know, it wasn't true. I'm fine at what I do, you know? So yeah, I would definitely tell myself, you never know what's going on in people's heads when they put you down and tell you you're not good enough. You never know where they're coming from or what's going on in their heads. More often than not, it's a reflection on them and not on you. So don't let the haters get you down. I guess that would probably be it.
Absolutely. That's beautiful, I think. And I totally agree. I think that's great advice that you would give yourself, and great advice for everyone, you know, even no matter the age, because
yeah,
the,
for sure.
Those things don't stop. So
yeah,
I appreciate that. But, you know, thank you so much for coming and doing this with me. This episode is a testament to the not giving up and persevering through. Or we did it. We got through it. It was tough. We probably spent, let's see here, let's say about 2 hours when we were expecting, yeah.
For our quite 20 minutes.
That. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But thank you. Like, no, I mean, to me, as this was going on, I'm thinking like, wow, Marie, she really practices what she preaches. Cause I mean, you know, she's not giving up. I'm not giving up. We got it done. So
cool. Well, yeah, just chill out and, you know, fix things. It doesn't take that long. You know, it's not that hard. Just to throw a little more time at it and just get it right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been awesome. And thank you again so much.
Thanks. It's good to meet you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to Raising the Steam for more useful content. Leave a review or comment to help us grow and continue bringing you valuable interviews, resources, and events. I'm your host, Em Ross. See you next time.